Okay, you guys up for it? Okay. Good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2020, and we're at the Veterans Memorial Building on 209 Surf Street. So, welcome. We have a quorum here. All members are present, so I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please observe a moment of silence? Right, thank you. Please stand, face the flag if you're able, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Do we have any planning commissioner announcements? Okay, seeing none, moving on. Tonight we have a presentation. So the advisory body's handbook and bylaws update. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Marlis McPherson, council member. And I'm here in place of the mayor, who is your council liaison. He is on vacation in Hawaii, so I agreed to come in his place and give you the update. He and I served on the subcommittee that looked at the policies, both for the council and for the advisory boards, and they were first put together in 2002, and they've been updated a number of times since. The most recent one was motivated by Barbara Spagnola, who is the chair of the CFAC, Citizens Finance Advisory Board. And she wanted to change a few things about mostly the way you keep attendance. And so that motivated us to appoint a council subcommittee. We studied it. We made a number of changes. So I have to tell you that the fewest number of them actually apply to the Planning Commission because you have special powers that the other ones don't have. But I'm just going to summarize all of the changes that we made, and I, even if it doesn't apply to you, just so you're up to date. And I would recommend that you check out, it's online, the most recent version of it if you have not read it yourself. Because I don't know if you've all had training. Training is a more recent thing that we've done for all of the new advisory board members, but it hasn't been going on that many years. So check it out. So you know we have six advisory boards, and then we have two that were special committees, special advisory committees. One was for the general plan update, and the other one was for the water reclamation facility citizens advisory committee. And so one of the actions we took is that we terminated both of those committees. GPAC is pretty much done, and the water reclamation facility is breaking ground hopefully next month, so most of the major decisions have been made, and we transferred the financial oversight to the Citizens Finance Committee and any technical issues that still might remain to PWAB, the Public Works Advisory Board. So those two committees no longer exist. Then we added a short-term vacation rental representative to the TBID because they are now in the TBID. And then we made the change that Barb Spagnola wanted, and some of that has to do with the way we keep track of attendance. Now, as you know, you are automatically off an advisory board if you miss either three meetings in a row or 25% of the meetings in a year. Now it is in a calendar year, and now we are asking you, your chair and or staff, to monitor absences and then alert us because the council needs to act if somebody is going to pass that. They're going to be automatically terminated unless you come to council and ask that they stay on. And it needs to be for excused absences, and we certainly, I'm sure, staff would like to see them in writing ahead of time. And probably the chair also. Also, Barbara wanted us to make clear that if we don't have enough qualified candidates, or even if one person applies and we don't feel that they're qualified, the council need not make a decision. Conversely, if we have a lot of qualified candidates and we don't want to lose people, we are now allowed to appoint an alternate, and that alternate would serve for 6 months. And in case a vacancy occurred, they could automatically fill, so we would not have to go back and recruit again. And the Planning Commission now has an alternate. So Laura Barton applied and was qualified, and so she is an alternate to the Planning Commission, in case you need her. Then we made changes to the work planning process, and as you know, the council has 2-year strategic goals, and those are promulgated in the year after a general election. So starting with next January, we will begin a new strategic planning process, and the first thing we will do is relook at our goals, and from our goals flow the objectives, and from the objectives flow the work plan for each of the advisory boards. And so what we will be asking is each of them to submit to council ahead of time any ideas that you have about what you think you need to be looking at in the coming 2 years. These are 2-year objectives and 2-year work plans. So, and I'm sure that Scott will arrange a meeting for you to do that. and then your ideas will come to council, staff's ideas will come to council, and then depending on staff workload, we will establish objectives. We will also be getting citizen input, probably by way of a couple of public forums where the public is invited to come in and also give their input on what they'd like to see on the goals and objectives. And this is a change now. When you want to add an agenda item, a future agenda item, you do have to ask permission from council, because the assumption is that you're working on the priorities, and because of limited staff time, we need to be able to know if staff has enough time to add something to their agenda. So the council wants to assess that situation, and if it's important enough, then we'll try to figure out how to deal with it. But we would like you to come to council with a request if you want to add things that are not on the work plan. And we know that things come up, and we know that things happen, and sometimes you have to do that. The council is imposing that same obligation on itself, in that if we want to add to the work plan, i.e. put another issue on, we have to ask our city manager if he has the staff capacity to do that, and if he doesn't, he can remove an item from the work plan. So we're simply trying to keep focused on the city's priorities and not get distracted with other issues. So let me see what else. Okay, next, reporting recommendations to council. And this is something that some of the other advisory boards have had trouble doing. They haven't known how to bring forward when you make a recommendation, or you've reviewed something and you want to let council know what you've decided or what you think. How do you report that to council? And it needs to be, if you want to make a formal recommendation to council, you need to actually make a motion, a second, take a vote, and then it would be conveyed either by the chair in an email or the liaison to the full council, so that we know what it is that you are recommending. And that's if you're making a formal recommendation. But otherwise, if you just have a discussion, we're not likely to hear about it unless it gets included in the staff report. We also made some clarifications in how advisory boards deal with staff, and we have requested that you get questions to your staff ahead of the meeting so that they are prepared to answer at the meeting. Sometimes, and we do this with at council, we always try to get questions ahead of time so that you don't catch staff off guard and make them look silly or like they don't know the answer. So that is something we are asking everyone to do. And again, it's more... And oftentimes what I've seen when we do it at council is if you get questions ahead of time, I always say, you don't need to get the answers back to me, but just be prepared to answer in the full session. They will actually incorporate answers in the staff report, as it turns out. So it's just helpful to get questions ahead of time. Okay. And then... We're asking that if you want to change any of your procedures, like the time you meet or the day you meet, that you ask council for that, that you come to council and ask permission to do that, just so we know what you're doing and what you're up to. And finally, we reduced the number of meetings for the advisory boards, except for the Planning Commission, which... You are definitely excluded. But the thinking on that was that one of our goals is to expand public participation and citizen involvement in the process. And so we looked at how many people actually attend advisory board meetings, how many people view them on YouTube, and we realized that it's not that many people participate in that way. And so we're trying to expand other methods. We now use Polco as a survey company. We're using more ad hoc committees to actually get in with citizen involvement, to get in depth on issues, more citizen forums, and alternative ways to get broader participation than just those people that may watch a meeting or attend a meeting. So that's the reason for cutting back on them, because it takes quite a bit of staff time to prepare and to prepare for and run and then follow up from an advisory board meeting. So there's one other change that applies to the Planning Commission, and that was that written into the bylaws, there was a requirement that we're supposed to have joint meetings with the City Council twice a year, and we realized that we don't do that. So instead of having it there, we have basically said that if the council may request it, if we need it, if we need a joint meeting because we have joint deliberation. And I believe that we did that several times during the general plan update, where we were both looking at issues and it was easier to get a joint meeting of both bodies. But in the future, it's not in the handbook anymore as a requirement. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. I encourage all of you to read the whole handbook because that covers everything. But I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Just questions. Jesse, questions? Susan?
So I have a question about asking permission from council for future agenda items, change of procedures going through council, reporting recommendations to council. Is that done during public comment? Is it done, say by the chair with an email to everybody on council and then you discuss it at a meeting? I'm sort of unsure about where that takes place and how, and then how long it would take if it's brought up, say, in public comment at a council meeting. You can't discuss it then because it's public comment, right. So it has to be agendized 2 weeks later. And
Well, I think it depends on what the issue is that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about just a simple change of procedure that's pretty straightforward and it's all right with staff and there's not an issue, it would probably come on our consent calendar. And it's just more for informational purposes so that the council is aware of what's mm-hmm. what you're doing. And with respect to other issues, if you make a motion, for example, that you wish to add something to your work plan, let's say, or you want to add another agenda item mm-hmm. to your agenda, you should vote on it so that we know that a majority or however many really want to do that. And then it would be a matter of sending a letter to the council, and I'm sure we would consult with staff, and it would be discussed at a meeting, unless it's just straightforward, and you know, then it could appear on consent. So it really would depend on what the issue is.
Okay.
And again, if it's just a matter of it's simple, it's straightforward, and the staff can take it on, council doesn't care. It's only when it's going to take substantial time for staff, and it's going to impact the ability to do the other items that are on the work plan. And then the council would take it up.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Michael?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying the absence rules. They were always very, I thought they were very punitive in some ways. The question I had was about the ad hoc committees. When you say ad hoc committees, those aren't, do you see those as official ad hoc committees that we would self-designate, or do they have to be approved by council? In other words, I understand the idea of the staff time, but we've also talked about some other initiatives, you know, and I know there's been a group that's been meeting about the potential historic ordinance. And that's kind of an ad hoc group outside of these proceedings. But if, say, Commissioner Lohr and I wanted to do something to advocate about electric cars or something like that with something, can the commission appoint ourselves without staff time to do something like that, or is that totally, how do you see that?
You know, two council members can obviously, if you're interested in something, work on it yourself. You know, there's no prohibition about something like that. If you want the council to take action, and you wanted to form an official, and you want to use a significant amount of staff time to do research for you, then you should, yes.
Because I'm not sure Scott may know. We've got a backlog of things we've suggested to be agendized. And
right.
I totally appreciate that he and his staff have limited amounts of time given the general plan push and things like that. But my understanding was those were just always kind of tabled until they internally saw it. But you're saying you want to have that go to the council to be approved.
Well, at this point, if you're actively working on it, you know, I'm also the liaison to the Harbor Advisory Board, and they also have a list of items that they have for future agenda items. They're not literally working on them now, and my suggestion to them was if there are some of those that you really want to work on next year, you should bring it forward in this process where we're talking about setting the work plans. And if it's a priority and it makes it on the work plan, then it's official. But you can't probably do all of them. And so that's why it's a matter of actually looking at that list and saying, well, what do we really want to work on? Or, you know, in conjunction with Scott and his, you know, staff limitations. So that would be the right way to get it on the agenda officially.
Okay, thanks.
As opposed to during the year if something comes up that you are interested in. And the ad hoc committees that I was thinking of are more where we're involving citizens directly in the process, like the short-term vacation rental ad hoc committee that we've established and the Blue Ribbon Commission that was established to look at the rates for the WRF. So it's a way to involve citizens more directly in the process than just at a council meeting speaking.
Yeah, I think what Commissioner Lucas was, you know, referring to is really more a subcommittee of the Planning Commission to work on something, because only two of you can do it, right? Three of you have a quorum, and then you have a problem. So.
Right. Yeah. And a subcommittee of the you can do that by yourselves and even ask, you know, Scott. It's a question of his time and how much time he can devote to it. Otherwise, you do need to ask his permission if you're going to involve him directly. Or Cindy or any of the other staff. So, okay.
Okay. Right. And when is the next goal-setting meeting for the City Council?
I don't know for sure, but they will start the process, I think, in January, February, thereabouts. I mean, the new council has to be seated, and then they would start that process. And so I'm sure that we would like input from all the advisory boards before we actually get into the citizen involvement part where we have, you know, the forums where the public can come in and participate in the process. But we have at least two of those that I know of. And, of course, you're free to come to that one as well. So.
Because we've kind of missed a cycle as far as our joint meetings.
Yes.
And so it seems like we're behind time, you know, already on that. So, right. And then just, you know, for the mechanics of this, as far as I read through the handbook and stuff, but it wasn't really clear. As far as our, if we have an excused absence, then would the alternate set in for an excused absence, or would the alternate only step in if a commissioner is dismissed?
That's a good question, and I'm not going to answer it because I'm not sure of the answer. So I think that it's only if, I think you could sit in but not participate is my understanding. So you could sit in at the meeting but not participate in the meeting, then alternate could. But I think the alternate is really if there is a vacancy and then we have already recruited somebody and that was the purpose of it.
And if we don't have a quorum, say for instance we have a earthquake or something and we only have, you know, so what? What would the mechanism be for that? Would it be, would we have to just cancel the meeting and wait till a further alternative?
If we don't have a quorum, then we wouldn't be able to meet.
Yeah.
So we would just cancel the meeting. Like if we were to show up here and there was only a couple of you, then we would have to cancel the meeting at that point. If we knew ahead of time, we'd have to post it before we showed up that we were canceling it. We can do that ahead of time as well.
Okay.
When I spoke with Dana Swanson, the city clerk, about how the alternate would work, it was, as Councilmember McPherson indicated, it would be if we had an actual absence, somebody left the Planning Commission, quit, moved out of town because you can't be on the commission if you don't live in town, one of those types of things, at which point, you know, for at least 6 months from when they initially appointed Joe, reappointed, then we would have the alternate for that time period. Other than that, we'd go out for recruitment again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is why it's important to let people know ahead of time that you're not going to be there. And I was thinking that the other time when you might need to use the alternate is if somebody was ill or somebody had a health issue and had to, you know, take a leave of absence, you would have somebody that could fill in.
Okay. And then what, just for curiosity, isn't the alternate term, the alternate's term the same term as a commissioner? So that it seems like a 6 month time period still wouldn't put you on the cycle of new commissions.
Well, yeah, and I think it was more because they were qualified and they'd gone through the process. If they were needed, then you wouldn't have to go through the recruitment process again. So it was more to avoid having to do that as opposed to appointing.
Yeah.
Because once you recruit, and we do typically recruit once a year for any vacancies, you want to give other people an opportunity to also apply.
So why wasn't, what I'm saying is, why wasn't their term a year than to coincide with a recruitment period rather than a six-month period?
I can't answer that one either.
Okay.
I don't recall that it was even discussed. I think it was the idea that it was a way to avoid having to recruit in the middle of a year. But again, those are good ideas, and we can certainly consider them in the next revision of the, the handbook.
All right. Any further questions or clarifications? All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. At this point, we will open the meeting up for public comment. This is the time period where we have the public comment on items that typically are not on the agenda, or on to comment on the consent calendar. Does anybody wish to speak at this time? Okay. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. And next we have the consent calendar. We have three items. Does anybody wish to pull an item on the consent calendar or make a comment or suggestion? Okay. Do I have a motion then?
I'll move we accept the consent calendar.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion? None? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Item B, we have public hearings. We have none. So we move on to item number C, which is new business. And do we have any ex parte communications? Anybody would like to?
I spoke with staff.
Okay.
And fishing family and somebody who seems to be connected with some of those projects down on the waterfront, but not the owner.
Okay.
And not Kathy this time.
Scott, do we need to declare staff consultations with?
No.
Okay.
I think mostly we expect you to talk to us.
Okay. And what about, if we, as according to the Brown Act, if we talk to somebody as a citizen that's not involved in the project, do we declare that?
Yeah, typically no. Typically what you're reporting as ex parte communications would be persons associated with a project that's in front of you.
Okay, good.
Representatives, architects, whatever, or the actual, folks that own the property, that type of thing.
I wanted to stay in line with the fine print of our new manual.
I better be careful here then. I deal with Kathy all the time.
Yeah.
Seems like once a week at least, if not in this office and in my other. So, do I need to declare that kind of communication, do you think?
Only if you're talking to her about something that's in front of the board.
Okay.
General conversations with folks you don't need to tell us about.
Well, it's a different.
Even if it is in the course of doing your job,
okay.
It's somewhat related.
I did talk to Kathy, I'm sure, in the last couple of weeks. So.
Okay, great. Great. Okay, so this item C1, it's 1001 Front Street, and it's a review of a conditional use permit, UPO-284. And do we have a staff report on this?
We do.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. This item is a review of the conditional use permit for 1001 Front Street, and this item is being discussed tonight because the Planning Commission requested this be agendized at their January 21st, 2020 meeting, specifically regarding concerns related to public access as required for the project and also compliance with the conditions of approval. So I've put together a presentation with some slides just to facilitate the conversation for the Planning Commission to review tonight's agenda item. The picture on the screen is the aerial image of 1001 Front Street, and the conditional use permit UPO-284 is the use permit that authorized approval for the floating docks, gangway, the landing, and after the fact permitting of the parking lot, which has been there for quite some decades. This conditional use permit was approved as a concept CUP by the Planning Commission and City Council in 2011. As required, the Coastal Commission approved the CDP in 2012, and the precise plan was approved by Planning Commission in May of 2012. As you can see by this image, this is a large property with a lot of authorized approved uses. This is a figure that's in the staff report, and I put this together just to show the number of different uses on the site. Notably, the Bayside lateral access, which runs through the property. The conditional use permit that the city approved in 2012 did not include any conditions for public access. It was the coastal development permit that required a number of different public access requirements. And in 2018, the Verges Landing project came before the Planning Commission and also City Council on appeal. And that included a condition for public access, and specifically the Beach Street Gate, which is here at the top of the screen, that required that gate be open from 7:30 to dusk every day. So that is a condition that's on the CUP for the Verges Kiosk, which was an amendment to the precise plan that we're discussing tonight. Here's another slide. So this is a unique property on the waterfront. It's likely one of the only properties, and Ms. Novak could correct me if I'm wrong during her presentation, but I believe this is one of the only properties in the city along the waterfront that is both privately owned and partially city lease site. So this red line through this west side of the property, the area to the left represents a city lease site, and the area to the east is the property owner's private property, Mr. DeGarrimore. So the on the next couple of slides, I've paraphrased the specific public lateral access conditions that are in the CDP that Coastal approved. Notably, the lateral access. The waterfront master plan requires a minimum of 8 feet. Coastal Commission is frequently required 10 feet in recent years. When this was approved in 2012, because of the constrained site, they only required that it be a minimum of 5 feet wide, located as close to the bayfront as possible. It also required that an alternative access way be provided when the area is closed due to commercial fishing operations. It also required that the lateral access be open as much as possible, and that public access closures were allowed during active fish unloading. This site is also an active commercial fishing operation site, so it's an interesting mix of uses in that there are coastal-dependent uses along with visitor-serving commercial, and then also this public coastal access that's there as well. The Coastal Commission required that a sign be required to be posted, a temporary or removable sign, informing the public of when the public coastal access would be closed. And I have a picture of it in the staff report. This is a picture that was taken approximately 2015, but it says the language that Coastal Commission has in those has in that condition. Excuse me. Additionally, other coastal public access conditions include that the lateral public access shall remain free of unnecessary materials and structures, including portable storage structures and garbage bins not intended for use by the public, and that floating docks shall be publicly available for general public pedestrian access. Verges Sport Fishing is currently using those floating docks, and that was included as part of the CUP approval. And directional signs were also included as a condition, and that they be located at both ends of the lateral access, the patio entrance, and the public view deck at either end of the commercial fishing wharf. And I'll have some pictures later in the presentation showing these areas. Also that the public view deck and public restroom be conspicuously signed and available for public use, and tables on the public view deck and within public seating patio. And within public seating patio, I think I have a typo here, shall have signs informing the public that no purchase is required to use tables. That language is quoted from the CDP. The next couple of slides, so I realize this is hard to see, so I've kind of broken up the site plan into three different slides. This is the top half, essentially. The CUP that the city approved looks the same as the coastal development permit plans, but the only change is that at both the top and the bottom of the site plan, there are handwritten notes by Coastal Commission staff, and I know that this is hard to read in the packet, so I will read it to you. It says, Coastal staff said, this here says, approximate location of lateral access to extend beyond lease line north of Stacks Wine and link up to existing sidewalk near intersection of Beach Street and Embarcadero. So the shaded area depicts the location of the lateral access. And then down here at the bottom, it says, sign to be temporary, removable, and not in place when commercial fishing operations not occurring. And then here's a zoomed in version. Still hard to read. This here is denoting approximate location of bench. They do have picnic table style seating here and two benches currently. This handwritten notation says, I didn't write that down in my notes here, but it says that is the approximate location of the trash area, right there. And then here again it says, coastal staff wrote, signed to be temporary removable and not in place when commercial fishing operations not occurring. And then here's the second half of that site plan. And the handwritten notation at the bottom says, lateral access to extend past southern lease line. So to kind of show you what this all looks like in real life, the next few slides depict photographs that I've taken over the years, in addition with some Google Earth screenshots. This is a Google Earth screenshot screenshotted in 2015 of what it looked like in 2012. Here you can see the Beach Street Gate on the north side, and the next slides we'll walk through heading south in this public access. So the Stax business is here on the left, and the fuel dock is here on the right. This is showing what it looks like with the coastal access signs here. The yellow painted pathway delineates for the public the coastal access as you would walk through the site. Coastal access signs on the left and the right. And these pictures, unless noted otherwise, were all taken in January or February of this year, just recently. And I apologize if some of these pictures seem kind of out of shape. I had to stretch them to fit in the page. So they might seem wider or narrower than usual. But this is just walking through at the beginning of the gate here to the left. And this is turning the corner with the commercial fishing operations and the fuel dock and storage area to the left and to the right. Here you can see so in the staff report, I noted that this area was faded, and I do want to correct that, but this was recently reslurried in the last week or so, and so that was updated actually after I wrote the staff report. So this is a current picture, and this was taken last Friday. The curb stop locations in this area slightly encroach into the lateral access painted pathway. The CUP approvals do require that these parking spaces all be angled. So here showing that they're angled. On the left, this is continuing walking down through that area. Here you can see a little bit more of the encroachment here. On the right portion of the public view deck or the wharf, there is a sign here noting that the tables are no purchase necessary. And to the left again, that lateral access dead ends into some tanks here. It requires the public to either walk around this car or to get by because there is a grade differential here as it drops down. This is looking in the other direction at those picnic tables that I was just referring to. This is the public wharf that is discussed in the CDP approvals. And then the lateral access extends south through the site, and it wraps around the outdoor patio that you see on the left. So this is public access. And then this is the gangway that leads down to the docks that Coastal also required be available for general public pedestrian access. This is the south end of the site, and coastal access sign here. And then looking the other direction, there is a coastal access sign here. There was previously, back in 2012 when the site was final, there used to be a sign here at the top. Since then, there is what I'm guessing is a crab trap or some type of wooden box that slightly obscures the view there.
And then this is the area showing the Southern View walk-up area, which the Planning Commission has expressed concerns about previously with the narrow access way here. This sign says patio entrance to the left, patio entrance to the left and order line to the right. And then from a distance is showing what that looks like on the right. The next couple of slides I wanted to show you depict the changes in what the site looks like, aerial images over the years. This is the most recent, or the current Google Earth aerial image on the site. And that lateral access way that we just walked through started here on the right. It went down, cut through the commercial fishing area here, wraps around those tanks, or requires pedestrians to walk around the parking area if there are cars in the parking lot. This right here is the public view deck wharf area. That continues around the outside of that patio area and then comes out this way. And actually, I think in this picture you can see that there is a line of customers. It is narrow in this area. The alternative would be to direct ordering customers to the east, which could conflict with the parking and business operations. So that's what it looked like in September 2018. You can see here an image of what it looked like in April of 2013, likely shortly after the project was finaled. One thing I wanted to point out, too, is that, okay, so here's April 2018. One of the concerns by the commission has been the access to the Bayside lateral access on the Beach Street gate. The property owner has submitted a letter to the city, which is Exhibit A in the staff report, documenting his concerns with business safety and liabilities. It does appear that this area has gotten more crowded or full of items in this area over the years. So 2018, 2013, 2011, if you notice this area here, and then 2007. One thing that came to staff's attention as we were working on the presentation tonight is that there is a canopy that historically was always here, 2007, 2011, and then in 2013, it was moved to this area here, presumably to allow for additional parking. However, it's not apparent to us that any of the approvals that the city gave for this included approval for the canopy, and normally that would be required as part of the CUP approvals. The approved plans for the project note this area as commercial outdoor storage. So in reviewing the CUP for the item that the Planning Commission requested tonight, the items on the screen are the areas of discussion items that staff is presenting for Planning Commission consideration. There are six items on the screen, and just to go through these, the Beach Street gate. Staff has frequently observed that the gate is not open in the morning by the required time. Mr. DeGaramore's letter, which was included in the staff report, states that his understanding was that the gate was required to be open by 8. He has reviewed his conditions on the project and acknowledges that the requirement by the city is that it be open by 7:30 in the morning. He's requesting resolution of this noncompliance item by logging all gate openings and closures, and then requesting that the Planning Commission re-review this in 6 months to document compliance. Lateral access visibility. As stated, the CDP requires 5-foot wide lateral access. Staff's recommending that a regular painting schedule be considered for the project as the heavy equipment operations that are in this area where the commercial fishing operations occur cause it to frequently fade and not be visible. And if we're considering trying to make the coastal access here more noticeable, it's, as noted in the pictures, not as noticeable as it could be, given that it goes through the commercial fishing area and then is also adjacent to the parked cars, which butt right up against that painted pathway. Number three, coastal access signs. Some of the original required coastal access signs on the wharf and around the patio area are no longer there or have impaired visibility. For example, at the top of the gangway, there was previously a sign that noted that that was a public dock area, and that's no longer there. In the past, staff has noted that there's a gate or that there's a chain across the top of the gangway. Secondly, there is a sign here. So this is the southern walkway. This is what was shown to the Planning Commission when it went forward to for precise plan in 2012. It shows actually two signs, coastal access at the top and then public seating area here, where currently, as in the picture I showed earlier, there's no sign here. The public seating area sign has been removed. And in actuality, there's just a sign that down below that just says coastal access. This has the benefit of the Coastal's logo and then an arrow directing the public to proceed to the west. Okay, so, and then number, So staff is also recommending for discussion by Planning Commission that a coastal access sign be considered to be added to the south of the walk-up window at that, I'm going to go back here to this photo here. At this walk-up window, when there is a line of customers, this sign is not visible at all. One consideration would be to add a coastal access sign to the gate, to the railing here, which would be off the lease site or off the property, to provide greater visibility to the public when the customer line is covering this sign here. And then the last two items, so Verge's kiosk information booth. This is really more of a point of information. This is an item that will be coming back to the Planning Commission in May of 2020. They have a condition on the project that it be re-reviewed by the Planning Commission within 1 year of kiosk installation. The kiosk was first installed in June, so we're going to be bringing that back to the Planning Commission in May. And then business signs. When the Verge's kiosk project was approved, staff did discuss with Mr. DeGaramore recommendations to pursue a master sign program on the site. Staff has noticed, and as you've seen with the pictures, is that there does seem to be an abundance of signs on the property. Staff would recommend that, again, that a sign program be pursued for this property. And so with that, that concludes my presentation. It is the slides are meant to facilitate a discussion by the Planning Commission. As noted in Mr. DeGaramore's letter, he does present some concerns for his business, and staff's also attempted to point out the public access concerns, and we are committed to working with the property owner to maintain public access here.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for this presentation. Do we have questions for staff? Jesse?
The first question I have is, I don't know if it's a discrepancy or a deviation, but the parking stalls at, did I lose it? There it is. The parking stalls along the wharf are at diagonal, but on the site plan they're parallel or perpendicular. Why is that, do you think?
They were presented in the plans as parallel, but there was a condition that they be diagonal at no more than 45-degree angle. And it was really because of the site was so
tight to maintain the parking and to get the drive aisle minimum requirements. Excuse me.
Okay. Would it also be, would okay? So that's one thing I have a question about. The other one is you said there was a tarp or a shade structure that disappeared on the north side of the property behind Stacks.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, to the side of Stacks.
Yeah.
So did that was that requested as part of their CUP, or is that just they just did that on their own?
I think they just did that on their own.
So would it be safe to say they gained 8 parking spots by removing a structure and relocating it?
No, they did not gain any additional parking spaces. On the plans, that this area was shown as outdoor storage area, but by the time that we did the final, that storage, that canopy was not there. So there was always parking along that, parking along this area here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's an image of what the this would have been right after a CUP approval, and it shows here all of these parking spaces.
But that's not shown on the CDP site plan. There's 4, 5 shown on the site plan, and like 9 there. Okay.
Okay.
Joseph. In the northern parking lot with the diagonal spaces butt up against the harbor walk, I noticed the cement tire barriers. They actually go into the harbor walk. Is that because you have to have enough backup space getting out of the parking lot, out of the parking space?
Yes, and they're required to have those curb stops there. It's a little confusing, and I will say that it's a voluminous amount of paperwork for this particular project, but from staff's research, the best that we could determine was that the lateral access was required to be actually in the center of this wharf area, and yet the painted pathway appears to be as close to the parking spots as possible, and I'll back up some slides here so that you see this encroachment here. Honestly, it is unclear why it's not on the wharf area and why it's over here. And it might be that the applicant or their representative can speak further on that.
Okay. Susan, questions? Michael, questions?
I guess my question would be more along that line. So what was adopted with the plan I've got in front that you were referring to that has the handwritten notations? There's a series of things like the hoist and a work shed, and there's things that indicate what the working part of the pier is, so mm-hmm. that the walkway that was shown did not impact the working aspect of the pier. So I guess the question I'll ask the applicant or the owner is, has the nature of those operations changed if they're being impacted by the walkway? Because then I would say we have some other things to talk about. Tell me again what the why it was the Verges thing on here, the Verges booth.
That was to point out the so Verges was included in the staff report because it's the only location or the only city permit that we have that required that Beach Street gate be open by a certain time. So this particular CUP, when it was approved in 2012, had no discussion whatsoever of lateral access. There's no conditions on the concept plan, and there's no conditions on the precise plan. Mm-hmm. And in previous city permit history, and there's been dozens of past city planning permits that have been issued for this property, and we've never come across any kind of requirement for lateral access. But it was when it went to Coastal Commission, and then Coastal Commission said, hey, you have to put in lateral access. So then that was on the project. So when Verges came in, that was a condition that was added by the Planning Commission was that an acknowledgement that the project had not been maintaining the lateral access as the CDP required. So when Verges came forward, since that was an amendment to the precise plan, That condition was added that you have to make sure that that Beach Street gate is open every morning at 7:30 in the morning. Coincidentally, the Coastal Commission condition isn't 7:30. It's dawn to dusk.
So it wasn't a new requirement. It was a restatement.
It was a restatement.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually a bit more flexible depending on the time of the year and the sunrise.
Okay. On the CDP for 311031 on Exhibit D, we have 2B. This was done in December 12, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a clear requirement for lateral access in that. So then it also states that no public on item F or paragraph F. It also states that there's no public access disruption. So these conditions were these the conditions that were in place in December 12, 2012?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this isn't an item that just popped up in the Verge's kiosk.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So these conditions have been in place
since 12
for 8 years
mm-hmm.
minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this isn't a new item that just showed up. Also, there was I noticed this is adding another click onto this. There was some new construction that was done on the Beach Street side, so the north side, which now looks like it was landscaping and now looks like it's seating area. There's barrel tabletops there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a clear indication that sidewalks should be a minimum of 8 feet on the exterior. Did they get a permit for that? And if they did, shouldn't they be required to have to increase the sidewalk width to 8 foot instead of putting seating area there?
So they did not get a permit for that work, or they did not contact. If they did, they did not contact myself or Scott. That particular address is located in our city files as 1099 Embarcadero. It also has an extensive amount of files, and so we limited the research to 1001 Front Street and specifically the UPO 284. But for the stacks permit, and I did do a quick review of that after the staff report was done, this use permit, this UPO 284, does have parking conditions that require that the parking lot there's a parking agreement requirement condition, and it says the parking lot to be utilized for on-site parking is located on an adjacent site, and that there was a parking agreement that needed to be recorded.
But this is on the Beach Street.
Yeah, okay.
This is what I'm...
Okay, you know what? I answered the wrong question here. Hold on a second.
Okay.
No,
that's fine.
We talked about this earlier, and I believe that there is a public works condition that had to do with the sidewalk. So just give me a second here.
Yeah, I thought I remembered it seeing that there was a minimum 8 foot sidewalk requirement, and I think that sidewalk presently is only 5 foot or thereabouts.
Okay, so there is an engineering condition, and it says, at which time there is a comprehensive redevelopment of the site, the installation of the upgrade of the sidewalk to a minimum of 8 feet in width shall be required. We would not have considered removal of the landscaping and tables to be a comprehensive redevelopment of the site, although that does kind of beget some other issues in that if they're adding outdoor seating, that does trigger some review in terms of parking requirements.
Okay. And then this lateral access, is this required to be ADA compliant?
That's a trick question because, yes, it's federal law, right?
Yeah.
So
it is a trick question.
Yeah.
I agree.
But
I think I know the answer, but I just wanted to
say. I mean, there's no specific condition in the project that says that, but yes, it's supposed to be. Right. Existing conditions on the site do not meet ADA, which is no different than many of our other lease sites down there.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Further questions for staff? Okay. At this point in time, we'll open up for public comment. Would the applicant like to come forward?
Good evening, Chair Luer and Commissioners. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening representing Mr. DeGaramore for the 1001 Front Street report. Before I begin, I'd like to thank staff and the Planning Commission for allowing us time to explain the events that have led to the questions and concerns regarding the lateral access and some other items. We do have a proposal to address these items that are in your staff report, and I will cover these at the end. But in the meantime, I'd like to go over some most recent events that have led to this point. First, Mr. DeGaramore would like to offer his sincere apologies for the misunderstanding regarding the opening time for the Beach Street Gate. He had a meeting with staff about a month ago and explained that the fuel dock opens at 8 a.m., and he just had it in his mind that the gate would open at the same time. He has instructed his fuel dock worker to open the gate first thing when he got to work at 8 a.m. He also admits that there has been a couple of times when his employee was late to work and the gate was open shortly thereafter. After bringing this to his attention, Mr. DeGaramore reviewed the permit and was quite surprised when he saw that the time was 7:30 instead. So it was an honest mistake on his part, and there was no intent to purposefully keep the gate closed longer than it should have or closed outside the allowed time for the commercial fishing activities. He has also heard criticisms about the two Embarcadero side gates open and late into the evening while the accessway gate is closed. The sole reason for this is Stax closes at 10 p.m., Since there are designated parking spaces in the lot, the gates are left open until the business closes and the patrons leave. Any evening that the business is closed earlier, those gates will be closed as well. Next, at the January 7th Planning Commission meeting, there were several comments made at the time that the Beach Street Gate was closed for public access for unjustifiable reasons. I believe this is an important set to set the record straight so that everyone is clear on why the gate was closed for such a period of time. Staff sent a note to Mr. DeGaramore on December 19th regarding the closure of the public access and the yellow stripe paint for the pathway. Mr. DeGaramore responded to the staff that the gate was currently closed due to an emergency repair on the fuel lines and that the access was not possible as there was a very large hole in the middle of the pathway. The pathway was also blocked by a portable fuel tank that was temporarily placed on the north end. This tank was later removed, but as it was in place to provide fuel for the Coast Guard boats. Furthermore, County Environmental Health required that he place the tank on solid ground and not over the water, so it was limited in the location he could stage the tank and still have it close enough to be able to fuel the boats, which ended up being in the pathway. All in all, it was just too dangerous for the public access around the construction area in the tank. Mr. DeGaramore also told staff that he expected the repair work completed in about 14 days and had planned to repaint the yellow access stripe as soon as the construction was complete and the weather allowed. As it ended up, the project took longer to repair because the County Environmental Health required modifications to the original plans and therefore he had to act accordingly. This delay forced the completion of the repairs, restriping of the parking lot, and the yellow striping to be done later than originally anticipated. However, he did finish the entire project as quickly as he could. Last, I would just like to say that when Mr. DeGaramore discovered that the fuel line running from the underground tanks located near Giovanni's Fish Market building to the fuel dock was at risk of failure, he decided repairs needed to be done and did not want to take a chance that the line could break and spill fuel into the bay. So I believe his quick action to take care of the situation outweighs the need for an open access way, all while knowing it would be closed for repairs if serious problems occurred. Next, while I'm on the public safety issue, Mr. DeGaramore has long expressed his concern for public safety in this area. He has frequently had members of the public walking around the closed area, through the unloading areas, under the hoist, in front of forklifts loaded with totes and fish and other areas that have caused him grave concern for their safety. He knows these folks are fascinated looking at the boats, fish unloading, and general goings-on, but frankly, common sense gets lost, and they just don't seem to be aware of the dangers of the forklifts and the heavy pallets, a swinging hoist, fish unloading equipment, or more. Unfortunately, these folks do not understand that the access way is closed to protect them and not to prevent them from access. Mr. DeGaramore doesn't mind if folks want to stand by and watch or take photos while they work, just as long as they stay at a safe distance and ask for closer opportunities when it's safe. There's a real conflict that we are asking the Planning Commission to understand, and that is that the city has expressed many times over the years they want to maintain Morro Bay as a working waterfront. However, we need to work together to preserve this and find a delicate balance between the commercial fishing, the fuel dock operations, and the general public's access to the coastline. Mr. DeGaramore believes that temporary closure of the accessway is essential for public safety and is also to the commercial fishing industry for continued dockside access so that the two can coexist. This is not an easy task, especially in this location. Unlike the fish dock at the north end of the Embarcadero, which has a very wide wharf area and an alleyway for pedestrians to walk and stay clear of the dock operations, this dock is narrower and abuts a parking lot, which significantly reduces the workable area for the commercial fishing activities. The coastal access straddles the wharf and the parking lot, so this further complicates and hinders the fishing industry's ability to safely unload without closures and the public understanding that it's truly not a safe place to be. In conclusion, Mr. DeGaramore is not trying to offend the city in any way, but he is simply trying to strike a balance with the needs of the commercial fishing industry, the fuel business, and the community. Over the years that he's been a good member of the public, he's provided many public benefits to all and is diligently working to protect many important aspects of this waterfront, such as the commercial fishing industry. Now, with all that said, I'd like to wrap up with the proposals I mentioned earlier. First, please accept the apology for the misunderstanding of the time. He will see to the gate will be open at 7:30 and will have his staff come in early to do this. If you don't see the gate open at 7:30, please give them the benefit of the doubt that there may be a good reason why it's closed, not just thumbing his nose at the city. Second, he will keep a log of the gate closures other than normal hours and provide it to the city if necessary. Third, he would like for you to please understand that this is a working waterfront, so there will be equipment, totes, and other related items stored on the dock in the vicinity. Fourth, please also recognize that there are numerous times that there are ongoing commercial fishing activities, and to note that there will be times when the crew needs to set up in advance of the boats coming in to unload, so totes and other equipment may be there in advance of an actual boat sitting at the dock. Fifth, the coastal access sign at the Beach Street Gate has the coastal access feet logo and is consistent with the others. Sixth, he will commit to keeping the yellow stripe visible. There isn't a regular repainting schedule that he can offer since it is all dependent upon the wear and the tear, and that could be anywhere from several months to a year's time. Seventh, he can replace the sign mounted on the food service line and include the text coastal access and order line with arrows to make it clear. Eighth, he can add public access sign at the top of the gangway. Ninth, he can relocate the coastal access sign on the southern windscreen from the lower edge to the upper edge and make it more visible. 10th, he is willing to come back to the Planning Commission with a report in 6 months to show that he is in compliance with the above proposals. And last, he would just ask, encourage the city to let them know if there's any problems in the future and give him a chance to rectify the problem before becomes a larger issue. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer some questions. Well, thank you for your time. And I know you had some questions, and I think maybe what I should do is Gio is here with me, and he'd like to come up and say a couple words if it's okay with you, and then we'll have the public comment, and I can come back and then answer specifically questions that you might have. And I did take time to print off the proposal that I just read to you. I've got 7 copies here. I'll give to staff, and then that way then you can have a copy to refer to. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So Mr. DeGaramo, I'd like to come forward, say a few words. Sorry, Gio.
Good evening. My name is Giovanni DeGaramore. I'm the owner of Giovanni's Fish Market and DeGaramore's Marine. Just about 3 points I want to cover, and we'll go from there. First off, just want to offer my sincere apology about the misunderstanding with the opening of the gate. I honestly thought it was 8 o'clock. That's what time we open. In my mind, that's what was happening, and I was pretty shocked to see that it was 7:30. That came up as part of the Verges project, so that wasn't originally one of the stipulations in all the other use permits. That was only after the kiosk that the 7:30 thing came in. So misunderstanding on my part, you know, I run the property, and at the end of the day, I'm ultimately responsible. I'm here to say it was my bad, and I own it. So just want to let you know. It's been rectified. Since we don't have staff there until 8, I'm actually paying somebody else to come in and just make sure the gates are open every day. So hopefully problem solved. Topic 2, questions. If you guys have questions for me, if you'd like some clarification on the operations on Front Street, please ask me. I find that most disputes can often be solved with communication. So I'm here tonight, and if you have any questions on what happens, I've been doing this since I'm a little kid, and I can maybe shed some light into what we actually do down there. And I can assure you I'd like to dispel the notion that you know, I'm thumbing my nose at the city or there's this act of civil disobedience. Nothing could be further from the truth. I try to be a good neighbor. I try to follow the rules. I'm a very black and white guy, so if it's there, you know what? I signed it. That's what I should do. I'll do it. Real simple. I'm a straightforward guy that way. And then third, I just once again want to voice my opinion for the record that I do have grave concern for public safety. It's an active construction type area. It's a working fishing dock. I feel like there's kind of a confluence of regulation here where I've got, you know, agencies like Cal OSHA on one side, and I've got the city of Morro Bay on the other side. Cal OSHA is the regulatory body for workplace safety. We've got forklifts, we've got cranes, we've got all the things that fall under regulation with the state and the Fed. And then I feel like I've got Morro Bay here telling me, well, we have to have public access. So it's very confusing to have this kind of diametrically opposed policies conflating on the property. So, you know, I worry about exposure to liability. One incident that Kathy actually asked me to pull the video, and unfortunately we only keep a month worth of video, but during this process I actually happened to be on a forklift one day, and we were still doing the construction where the fuel lines were falling in, and we had open pit and we had caution tape, and I actually watched a lady walk right past the caution tape because she wanted to go out on the dock, and I was coming with a forklift. I was unloading some type of fish. I don't know if it was bait or what have you for the fishermen. But, you know, 20-pound boxes of squid, they put 100 on a pallet, it's 2,000 pounds. I came around the corner. I didn't see her. She stepped this way. I turned that way. She went left. I went right. What happens when you turn right with a big 2,000 pounds of thing? It goes left. It was very close to tipping. I can tell you I've been driving forklifts since I'm about 12 years old. It was only because I've been doing that since I'm 12 years old that I avoided a catastrophe. She almost got smashed, because she had to be out there under the hoist. She wanted to look at the seals. She wanted to step over the scales. She wanted to go well off the yellow brick road. And it happens every single day, and it happens hundreds of times a year. Just come down and watch, and you'll see it. I'm not exaggerating the story. Had I had one more day of video on my DVR, I would have pulled it for you tonight. It's the way it happened, and it happens all the time. People go where they're not supposed to go. I don't know if it's human nature or what, but they do that. One more instance we had was a vandalism incident recently that the police department documented. An individual came down the waterfront, vandalized about 6 businesses during the night. We have them on video. They went behind stacks. They pulled a fire extinguisher off the wall, continued to go out to the end of the fuel dock, sprayed it out over the fence, all of the fuel dock, all of our equipment, just getting into general mischief, then attempted to get on the forklifts and start them. Thank God that they didn't know the sequence to start it. Things like these happen all the time. They happen in the daytime. They happen especially at the nighttime. We have a problem. We've got people that have mental health issues or drug issues that are wandering around getting into all kind of mischief. I'm concerned for my liability. I'm concerned for their safety. And so that's what makes this situation kind of very confusing for me, trying to balance that, trying to keep you all happy, trying to keep the insurance company happy, trying to be able to sleep at night knowing nobody's going to get hurt. Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I'm frustrated, and I'm here to talk about it, and hopefully we can come to a resolution that works well with everybody. I think I've really tried my best to stay within the spirit of the code and the law and what you guys want and what makes common sense. I painted the road. I don't even recall that the painting of the yellow brick road was even a condition. I think I actually offered that idea so that we all were on the same page. Like, I could tell my employees, here's the yellow brick road. Don't put anything there. Don't put any bins there. Don't put any forklifts, no pallet jacks, no fish. Let's keep that open. Obviously, we go through it a lot, but let's not park anything there. And then for the people that want to enjoy watching a working waterfront, they know kind of where to stay on. So I really have been doing my best to make this all work for you all. So If you have any questions for me, you certainly can ask them now, or if you want to.
We'll continue public comment and probably have you come back up for questions.
Got it.
At the end? Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. I'm Sean Green from Morro Bay. I very much respect the parcel holder for their concern regarding public safety, and they're proposing some suggestions on how to mitigate some of the concerns that this Planning Commission is well aware of. This parcel and their blockage of coastal access has come up at least once a year, whether it's at Planning Commission meetings or GPAC meetings, and yet we continue to see the same blockages. It's gotten to the point, and you guys have seen the photos up on the screen that the public can see as well, that as soon as the 2012-2013 CUP and CDP were approved and they got their final approval, the parcels essentially operated almost privately in terms of being able to relocate things at will and not really receiving any kind of pushback from what I would see as this Planning Commission's responsibility as well as staff on maintaining that lateral access. I think the biggest concerns, I'm just going to go through a list of three locations that you can see pretty easily on the overhead of the parcel. On the north side at the beach and Embarcadero side, the discrepancy between 7:30 and 8 a.m. is hardly the issue with that gate. It's closed more often than it's open during the middle of the day. So that's beside the point. And if 8 a.m. is easier for the parcel holder, I'm fine with 8 a.m. It's noon closures that are far more problematic. There's been a clear inability to police itself, so I think that removal of the gate is really the only option at that point, and returning to the 2015 example of a cone and a temporary sign rather than the gate that can be locked and closed with little that the general public can do in terms of finding out information, etc. So a logging of closures and openings seems kind of silly when we could just simply remove the gate and require a temporary delineator or chain system. At the midpoint of the parcel, where the pathway is supposed to go right along the waterfront along what appears to be the lumber section, not the paved section. Right at the midpoint, there is almost always a set of crab tanks that doesn't seem to appear on the 2012 and 2013 approved plans and blocks the north-south lateral access, requiring people to go at this weird little slant around that parking space that's angled. You guys have probably faced it as well. There's a problem right at that bottleneck at the midpoint. As my time's running short here, I want to focus mostly on the south side, which I think is getting overlooked. Not only did the parcel holder remove completely a coastal access sign, but the line delineators are a huge problem. And we cannot have the line move southbound. It needs to move eastbound along that business for the sake of coastal access on the south side. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Seems that's all of the public we have here. Do we have questions for the applicant? Okay, Michael, did you want to start? Okay, do we want to take five? Okay.
Kathy, I don't know if you're the operations person or if we should get the forklift aficionado. I'm a big forklift fan, too. My big concern on this is are we saying that the 2012 plan was inadequate to describe the operations area for the working waterfront?
Well, that's an interesting question. So we tried to explain to the Coastal Commission when we were doing the dock project that there's this problem with commercial fishing operations and the need to store totes, have equipment. There was been live fishing industry going on, so there was tanks and all that kind of stuff. The Coastal Commission said, forget it. You're putting in a coastal access no matter what. And there is a section in the LCP that does talk about coastal access, lateral access, and interference with day-to-day operations. And the city has in the LCP the ability to not require a coastal access. I tried to bring that to the attention of the Coastal Commission at the time, and they said, "That forget it." So what we ended up doing with the Coastal Commission, they said, okay, then you put one in, but we'll just allow you for 5 feet. So that was the best compromise that we could do with the Coastal Commission, to have the parking in the parking lot, have this 5 foot wide, and still give Giovanni enough wharf space, or try to give him enough wharf space to be able to have all of the equipment. And things fluctuate, because it depends upon what season it is. If it's salmon, you might, you know, we have a lot of salmon boats here, you're going to have more totes, squid, so it all, there's not one answer that at one particular time, you know, yes, there is room sometimes, and sometimes there's not.
I guess the concern is, though, is there any concern on his part that the location of the, we know that from the way we've seen it striped, that there's been an articulation issue with the exact location on the 2012 plan. And I just wondered, is that coming from trying to say there's not enough space for the operations?
Well, part of the problem when Geo put the paint on, it was the lateral access was part on the wood wharf. Well, he's discovered that the wood wharf and the yellow paint just doesn't stay. So to try to help with the visibility, he moved it over a little bit so that he could keep the paint on the pavement to make it last longer, and then actually gives people a little safer place to walk, gives him a little bit more room, and without encroaching into the parking lot too much.
Most of my things are comments, but my concern is, if we're looking at this issue now, I'd be most interested if we've got an idea about the priority of a working waterfront, the priority of access coming through here. Is it a secondary or tertiary thing about the number of parking spaces? Because I'd much rather see people who know they can walk through here walk through safely, that the operations aren't compromised by people in a plan from 2012 that may not adequately assess the operations today, 8 years later. And we've seen, you know, other instances at the waterfront where the experience of being there is more important than parking spaces.
Right. We do have a dedicated number of parking spaces that are directly tied to the CUP and the CDP. Because Verges is operating out of there, since it's a sport fishing operation, it requires much more parking spaces for the permit. So I would say that if we're talking about losing parking spaces, I would say that we just need to be very careful so we don't jeopardize the CDP and then force GEO to go back to the Coastal Commission and to try to do an amendment to his permit to reduce the number of parking spaces. And then if we don't have the actual number of parking spaces, then we fall under the city's parking in lieu at $15,000 a space. So we kind of have a domino effect where we have to be really careful about the parking area.
I'm just asking questions at this point.
That's right. So I want to make sure that you had the whole story.
Excuse me, Michael, but Kathy, it looks like there's four parking spaces there that are diagonal that Michael's alluding to. If we park that, if we do parallel parking there, that would allow more room for the walkway, and it would also give a barrier, more of a physical barrier for protection. So we're talking about maybe losing one, maybe two parking spaces there. Is that, have you looked at that option? Instead of the diagonal parking, to go parallel parking?
Yeah, I'd have to look. So when we did this plan, one of the things that the city required us to put on the plan was that we had to designate those parking spaces closest to the gangway for the boat. So that was a city requirement. So I would say that, you know, I'd have to double check and make sure that we're not doing something that would cause a problem with the city permit. And then we had an extensive amount of work done with the Public Works Department when we were planning this parking lot so that we could get the appropriate number of spaces plus the drive aisle widths and et cetera.
Yeah. And so we had, you know, one of the things we do is get parking exemptions here and variances as far as the Planning Commission. So I think we would be able to if that's the solution, you know, I think we could be pushing forward that solution to help to see if that works for everybody. You know, that's just a possible solution. So let's
part of
the dialogue here. That's what I'm just thinking about.
So I'm hearing that Giovanni said that, you know, we're amenable looking at it, so maybe we can put that on the list that let's consider and see if there's any, you know, pitfalls, major pitfalls that would cause problems that we couldn't do something like that.
Okay. Michael, do you have further questions for right now? Susan?
I had one question about the tanks that had crab in them the other day, and then they were covered today. People were enjoying looking at the crabs. So I'm pretty excited about that. In this map from 2012, they're showed running parallel to the ocean, and today they do go across the path. And I can see there's infrastructure under there and that there's about a foot drop. Is there a reason that they're moved that way? Is it because of that drop?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So there was originally, we had it planned the other way, but because of the where the access came down and met where that drop off, it was problems, and Giovanni was saying that he had people actually falling, so he put that crab tanks up there to protect people from just falling off the and got them around so they can get down and not fall.
So in terms of parking, one of my concerns was it makes it really tight there if people are walking around. What I saw, and I was telling staff this morning, is you could tell the tourists just decided to cut across the parking lot and go in front of stacks, which in my mind is a logical thing to do. People who were locals made it around and were coming from or going across the path that's there. But if I were going to move any parking, that might be a place I would pull something back. But I think that's...
Good.
Oh, and then on the other side of... there's the Stacks Wine Bar, and then where they were talking about the seating area, but between the wall of Stacks and that seating area, there's kind of a corrugated metal storage area that's open.
Right. Somebody mentioned that it was on the in the parking lot side a long time ago, and it was just a cover that was there to protect gear and et cetera. And then when he did the redo of the parking lot, then he moved it on the other side. And so, again, it's just equipment. He stores nets. Anything for the fishing operations is just a way to just cover things up.
Okay. Thanks.
Jesse?
Just one question. So, I mean, I've heard a lot about, you know, maintaining the CUP, maintaining the CDP, and making sure we're compliant with what was approved. But it doesn't seem like that's really the case going on. How would you explain the differential between what exists and what was approved?
Other than he's missing a couple of signs. Number one, that's one. The plan, if you're talking about the
Well, the parking lot layout is significantly different than what's approved on the CDP
site plan. Yes, and that was because after the plan was approved and then we worked with Rob Leivik, the city engineer, in designing the parking lot, he had some concerns about the drive aisles, and we were trying to look at how could we put the parking number of parking spaces in there that we needed so that to meet the requirements of the permit, have the drive aisle widths that we needed, and have the parking spaces. So Rob Leivik basically said, here, if we put angle parking in instead of the perpendicular parking, there's enough distance between the two parking spaces. So it was all pretty much driven by the city engineer telling us what the city requirements were for the parking at the time. And that's why the change was made. It wasn't a change that GEO made just because he wanted to. It was all just to meet the city regulations.
Okay. That makes sense. Thanks.
Joseph?
Kelly, I take it if we were to simply, it was my previous question, if we were to take the cement tire barriers and push them back 2 feet, that would make the diagonal parking spaces too short? Is that?
He's pushed them back a little bit already so that he can try to get the yellow painting in and actually move it back onto the land side just a little bit more. The yellow striping was a little bit further on to the wood wharf, and so he's pushed it back and pushed the curbs back. But if we can't really push them back much more, because if we do, yes, you're absolutely right, we'll lose the parking spaces won't be big enough.
What I'm looking at is pushing them back sufficiently so that what I'll call the nose of the automobiles don't impact the walkway. We're talking, I imagine, a foot and a half or 2 feet.
I asked Giovanni that question before we got up here tonight, and he said that he's going to take a look at it and see what he can figure out, and if he can, he will.
And the reason I asked that is because when I looked at the property, there seemed to be 4 or 5 feet at the back of the parking space that wasn't occupied. They were all taken. The cars were all parked there, but there was 4 or 5 feet at the back of the parking space that wasn't being used. And to my thought, because you could just push the cement thing back. The other question I have is with respect to the southern end where the order window is and all that. The post and chain business only runs for about 10 feet or so, and I was wondering there likewise if you what I saw was that the people who have their cars parked there, they actually stop the nose of the car directly over the cement barrier so that the tires weren't, they were 2 or 3 feet east of the barriers. So there was this space of probably 3 feet before you got to the harbor walk. So I was wondering why can't you use that corridor, if you will, that would run along the harbor walk for a good 20 feet, again, just pushing the parking spaces back a little bit, and that would keep the people from not milling about on the harbor walk, which is the real problem when they're trying to get food.
So the only problem with that is that parking lot is not Giovanni's. That's a city parking lot.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking about making off-site changes, so we don't, it was not considered in a plan, or the original plan, so we would, the city would have to weigh in on this because it's outside the lease boundaries.
Okay. Well, to me, that seems like a decent compromise and a possible solution. All right. Thank you.
Okay. AGP is putting an overhead up. This was a photo that I took today at about 11:45 or so. And so this is just on a Tuesday midwinter with minimal crowd there, and this is pretty typical. The order line completely blocks public access, you know, and this is maybe 10 people there, and you know, to your great accomplishment, you usually have good crowds there, you know, almost every day, which I appreciate, and I want to see continue. But this is a real choke point and a real problem area that I think we need to work with. Have you thought, what I'm seeing as the primary problem is that you have the order window at public access, and so there's no allocation for the public to line up except in the public access. Have you thought about relocating that window to the west side and then having your queue along your patio area where you have plenty of room rather than putting it in the public parking lot?
Well, Jim might have to weigh in on this, but I think we still run into some issues because the design of the interior on the west side is his food line for his preparation, the cooking facilities. So we'd be talking about, he's got the takeout, the pickup window out there, but the rest of the inside, you're talking about reconfiguring the whole inside of the kitchen in there to be able to try to break through, I think, possibly.
So
the other problem is you still would have some issues with the people lining up because then you'd be interfering with the pickup, and then there are public restrooms down there. People could be lined up and blocking the public restrooms. I think we'll be also interfering with
So is it more important for this, you know, from our point of from the community, to have lateral access and bay access, or to have him have an efficient pickup window? You know, this is what we're dealing with too, you know.
But I, so. this was approved, you know, quite a long time ago, and so I think he's doing his best right now to try to provide as much as he can. He put the bollard and chain in there to try to keep people back, and it's sometimes.
But if it's, Kathy, if it's not working, maybe we should, you know, we might need to find some solutions on that. So this is a point of discussion, you know, at this point. And one thing I really want to be clear, you know, that, you know, as a preamble to you guys into the community and stuff, is my dad was a fisherman. I grew up as a fisherman. I fish commercial, you know, down in San Diego. And so I really want to see the fishing community and the harbor continue as a working harbor front. I think this is the one thing that we have that draws the most tourists to us, is keeping this as a working harbor front. So making the restaurant and the fish market and the commercial fishing offloading there work together, I think is what, you know, what our job is, and to make it work so that you've got a profitable business, so you can stay in business and you can support the community. And what you've done there has been great, but it also has to work for the rest of the community too. So there's probably going to be some trade-offs here and there. So we just need to work with this to make it a good solution. So that's just a preamble. So I'm sorry if it's not a question.
That's okay. I mean, if you have some reasonable suggestions, I think, you know, Giovanni's willing to listen to what some suggestions might be that, you know, could be easily accomplished. I mean,
one of the things that, you know, I guess we're into comment period now. One of the things it could be is either an extension of the lateral access on, you know, with city approval on the bay side to widen that choke point there, or another solution is to turn the window to change the internal operation of the restaurant, because it's obviously not working the way it is, to do the order window and the pickup window on the west side. I would personally rather see a widening of that choke point so you have clear path. But whatever you're going to do is you're going to have people wanting to line up here up against the bay so that they can see, you know, so they can lean against the railing and look into the bay while they're waiting for their food. So this needs to be thought out much, much clearer and much better defined. And so I think, I don't know if we can come with a solution tonight on this, but, you know, this is a real critical point that we need to solve, a real critical problem. Go ahead, Joseph.
I'm unclear then, and forgive me, but in the photograph there, what are the difficulties of backing those cars up?
There's
3 feet.
There is a problem in there with, for one thing, the people are still going to line up against the railing. Common, you know, nature. It's just human nature. The other problem is if you back those cars up anymore, it looked like you had, you know, accessibility problems behind them for that turnout. And
again, I looked at that, and here there was clearly 3, 4, and sometimes even 5 feet between the rear of the parked car and the end of the park, the white parking space, and again, the front of the car was over the concrete tire barrier. So that might be the easiest solution in terms of creating a space. Now, you know, how to police it so that the people stay in that corridor and not move over into the other corridor, that's another issue. But I mean, physically, we might be able to arrange something.
It may be. I think, you know, we might be looking to a solution like that. That's a suggestion that we might look at. And I think this is going to devolve. You know, I want to open this up and leave it as devolving instead of a testimony and a response is if we can keep this as a communication, you know, for right now it's not how we normally do a public hearing, but I think that's might be the best solution for coming for addressing some of these problems here, if that's okay with you guys. Yeah, so Susan?
The tank that's on the south side that's hot, tell me about that.
It's a crab tank for cooking crabs.
And I understand that that's a challenge. You don't want people lining up next to that because it's hot and they
right.
get burned.
The employees need to get out the door and go and put the
right.
crabs in there because people are usually waiting for them to cook the crabs. So there's
right.
got to be have employee access okay. back and forth to the tank.
So there's not really a good place to relocate that.
Not on that going, like running mm-hmm. east and west.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But if I'm hearing this correctly, and I mean, pardon me for being this guy, but I mean, there's just not enough room to do what you guys want to do. I mean, that's kind of quite frankly what's really going on there. You guys have maybe just outgrown that space, which is great because that means you guys are doing a great business. But at the same time, I mean, I think this is clearly unacceptable and we're going to have to do something. I mean, and something has to be done.
Okay. And then let's move, you know, this is going to be a touch point. We're going to need to come back and look at this again. So I think, you know, you may be onto something, Jesse. We may need just more room. But let's talk about the lateral access along the wharf, you know, and stuff. I agree with what you've done as far as moving the access out onto the paved parking area. I think it's better for ADA accessibility. I think it gives a clearer delineation between the working and the public access. And I think that, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I think that was a really good move. So one of the solutions that's used in other harbors, and it's actually even used over at the other fish loading dock, is a simple, you know, cone and chain that would go laterally along the separation between the pavement, between the asphalt and the wharf and the wooden, so that you could delineate that, okay, this here is lateral access, this here is wharfage. So if you had storage on the wharf, if you needed to leave your totes there or your forklifts parked there, then that would be a clear delineation. If you needed to open up the area, you'd just move the cone and the chain all the way over to one side, and then you've got clear access, and then you've got clear working area. There is a real problem between the active offloading and the public access. But, and I don't, you know, I worked as a longshoreman. You know, I offloaded tuna for, you know, in San Pedro and San Diego. So I'm fully aware of moving, you know, cranes and, you know, half-ton buckets and stuff like that. So you need to keep that separate from the public. But when you're actively offloading fish, then the area should be closed. It should be safely closed. And it can be delineated with chain and signs, and I think you can open that, you know, close off that northern gate with a chain and delineate and move those cones out to, you know, to into the parking area so you have clear access for offloading and running your forklifts and stuff and then, you know, unloading it onto trucks and stuff. I don't have a problem with any of that. There's no, you know, there's no issue with the safety factor. We need to keep that. The problem that I've had can be delineated by a friend of mine that I ran into down there today when I was looking at it again. She said, "You guys must be doing something with this now." You know, and I go, "Well, why? What do you think that?" She said, "You know, she walks her dog down there 3 or 4 times a week. Every week, she grew up here." She said, "Yeah, this is the first time in the last couple of weeks is the first time I've seen this gate open." You know, so that's the perception. That's what we're dealing with, and that is the case.
So, Gio's got video cameras down there. So, I mean, if it really becomes necessary for him to prove that the gate is open, you know, we can access video. There may be a perception that it's closed because, like I said in my presentation, he closed it the mid in December, and it was closed for several weeks because he was working on the repairing this fuel line. He had a hole down there about 15 feet deep. So, I mean, but, you know, I mean, people, you know, have that perception because when we hear, well, it's closed all the time, and if they happen to go down there and they just recollect that, or if maybe they went down there at 7:30 and it was, he hadn't, was thinking that he had it open at 8.
Okay.
So GEO has really honestly tried to comply with the permit and keep the gate open. He gets his, I mean, that was his instruction to his fuel dock employee was, the first thing you do when you get to work is you open the gate.
Yeah. Okay.
And he has been.
Kathy, I know. How many, Scott, how many times have you heard from this commission that we needed, that the gate has been closed over the course of the last 2 or 3 years?
Numerous times.
Numerous times. So we're not talking about the last month. We're
okay,
talking since we're talking since 2012.
Okay, what I think, and one of the things I said tonight too was, it would be nice before something gets really out of control if somebody would either call Gio or say something to Scott and have Scott send Gio a quick message, because that's what Cindy did in December. And again, I think people have to recognize that the gate may be closed for a specific reason, and if they just see it closed and they don't see a boat at the dock, they think that he's got the gate closed and he's trying to keep the public out. But in actuality, he's doing some work there and the people are not recognizing. So I think you need to give him the benefit of the doubt. And again, if you know, we can, he can go back for a month and show you the video. So there's got to be some way that we can work things out so that the public isn't, that they understand. And GEO has offered to send them a note and say the gate's going to be closed, you know, in the normal window when it would be open because I've got a boat coming in and I've got to set up the tow truck. He's offered to do that to help eliminate some of this problem if the people are saying that the gate's closed, and if he sends them a note and says, we got a boat coming in at 3 o'clock, we're closing the gate at 2 o'clock, and then somebody complains, and we can verify with the city staff that GEO said, oh yeah, he sent him a note and said that the gate's going to be closed, then we can hopefully eliminate that. But we're all looking back in past history and trying to say, oh, you know, it was this way or it was that way, and it's really hard for us to try to.
Yeah, and I want to get beyond that. And so, Jesse, go ahead.
I have a question real quick. And I don't know if this is possible, and please tell me if it isn't. And I don't pretend to know how fishing operations works. If they entered from the south and they came up to the working waterfront and they had a boat offloading, would it be possible to have somebody directing them through the drive gates, I mean, round stacks to get them out of the way?
So what the sign says that...
Not what the sign says. Would it be possible to stage a person like you would stage in a street that is saying stop, go, stop, go? Would it be possible to have somebody there directing traffic to allow the people to get from point A to point B?
No, because there was a couple things. We can't direct people through the parking lot to go from the view deck through the parking lot to the sidewalk and the embarcadero. That's not safe. We can't direct people that way. GEO's only got so many employees there to be able to do things, and trying to put essentially a policeman to monitor.
Well, not a policeman, just traffic control.
But an employee standing there waiting for somebody to walk up and then say, oh, well, you can't go that way because we've got commercial fishing operations going on. What they're supposed to do is turn around and go back the other direction that they came. That's what the sign says. But we really, I don't legally think we can direct people to walk through a parking lot because that's an unsafe condition. And you're putting, we've got, from the back of Giovanni's Fish Market, he's got forklifts coming out the back door going over toward the wharf. So you're actually putting the pedestrians in a position where they're trying to cross where Giovanni's got his operations going on back and forth.
Right, but I think what's being lost here is that, okay, so if tourists are coming from the north or coming from the south, they hit this roadblock and they have to turn around and go around, they're not going to keep going. They're going to go back the way they came and they're going to leave. And that's what's happening. I mean, realistically.
Yeah. Okay. So
I feel like a lot could be solved by adequate, probably larger signage, when you're going to close the gate, put up a sign, closed for commercial fishing operations. You've got something similar here, but probably bigger, probably higher, so that people are aware of what's going on. Probably direct them, alternate beach access around the front of stacks and across. I think allowing people, if it's possible, to come to the, you know, if you want to watch these operations, which are cool, you know, they can go to that viewing deck and watch from a safe distance what's going on. I think one of the big challenges with government is it doesn't understand business. And I think we are trying to do this balancing act thing, but I think some of it could just be solved by clearer communication. Some of it is some what we call specific local lousy conditions. You've gotten too big for the site. And so somehow we have to try and work with that. But I do see people who just cross the parking lot, you know, because they, especially with those tanks, they aren't quite aware, but they do keep going, yep. You know, and people coming from the Harbor Walk to the north, I personally, you know, wasn't really aware that that was a possibility to walk through there. Again, signage would help with that, but I always just walked around stacks and went to the front, and then, so... I understand the challenges, but I think, you know, maybe with some good signage, some documentation of things, I think it's, in my mind, you've got to close it during those operations. It's just not safe.
The biggest concern we have about the signage is that, you know, we start putting, let's put a sign up here, let's put a bigger one over here, then we have this sign blight going on, you know, and I think that's been a concern of, you know, what the Planning Commission and other folks have been talking about with the sign ordinance and other businesses. It's like, don't put that many signs up there because there's too many signs. So if we could be conscious of figuring out a way that we can do this without making it be sign blight, that would be great too.
Okay.
I think Cindy recommended a master sign program for this site.
Yeah. So we are asking for that because when we researched the site, not surprisingly, because it's been there for a very long time, and there are a lot of businesses there. You know, you get what I call, you know, sign creep, and so there's a lot of stuff on there that we don't have permits for. And so that's why we suggested that, and because they were missing some of the lateral access signs, and so we thought, you know, we should probably get this all wrangled in. So that was why the suggestion was made. I'd also point out that the coastal development permit condition on the project requires them to identify a secondary means of access around the closure. I think... what the plan does, though, is, and they're supposed to submit a plan that shows what all this was going to be. I think this is the plan, and Madeline Cavallari wrote on here, and you know, and they have some of the notes on here that says that the plan for lateral access when this is closed is not to walk through the parking lot. It's to turn around and walk back south and go around the south end of the building past the where the walk-up window is. That's the way this reads. So it does suggest doing that, but then this plan goes further and points you back around going south and not through the parking lot, similar to what Ms. Novak said. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to say one of the pictures that I showed in the presentation has that language that directs the customer or the public to go back to the southern accessway.
Okay. I think we need to close public comment at this point, and then we'll have discussion here. And after our discussion, if we may open it back up again, so we'll see how this goes.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much, and thanks for the frank back and forth. Okay. I guess I'll start on this, if that's okay with everybody. I think there's this interplay that happens here. It also happens in San Diego, Fish Harbor. It also happens in Ventura. It happens in Channel Islands. It happens in Moss Landing. It happens in Santa Barbara. It's a problem. It's tough, but it can be solved, and it is, you know, there are solutions for this. I don't have a problem with temporary cones and chains separating the parking lot from the wharfage. So that, and then during active offloading periods, to have the north access and the south access chained with a sign that says actively offloading or actively processing fish or actively processing, whatever the signage needs to be, so that that lateral access is closed while it is actively being used. When it's not actively being used, it should have clearer, freer, ADA compliant access through the whole site. That means people don't have to walk around fish tanks. People don't have to, you know, squeeze through a crowd to get to the access point at any time during the day. They don't have to, you know, try to fight, you know, open a gate or, you know, or have a gate closed on them. So temporary barriers, in fact, it even states this in the 2012 Public Access Management Plan. If you look at item 2, paragraph B, it says public access closures shall be limited only to periods when active fish unloading activities prohibit safe public access. Prohibit safe public access should be accomplished using temporary ropes, cones, or other appropriate barriers, and must include signs informing the public of the expected duration of the closure and directing the public to alternative public access through or around the site. And during that period, I don't have a problem with them going around, you know, the sidewalk and around the front of the property. So safety is paramount, but also public access, lateral access is critical. So during the active periods of offloading, then people can walk around the front. One of the, you know, conundrums or the, you know, dysfunctions I see is that even during all these active offloading of the sites, that parking lot is still open. The gates are open on the street. There's cars parked there. There's public in there. So if they can make accommodations for the cars that are parked there and the gates being opened, well, there's no excuse to have that gate on Beach Street on the North Street closed. So you can't have it both ways. But so I don't accept the argument that this was a one-off and only happened in the last couple of months, because it hasn't. And it's been documented. There's been several comments from the commission here to staff to check on it. There's been emails back and forth, you know, from staff. You know, anyways, that's what staff has told me, that there's been emails and it was going to get corrected and it never, ever got corrected. So, but I think we have a chance to correct it here. And I think we can do it to everybody's satisfaction, not satisfaction, but to where it's mutually acceptable and it's good for the business and it's good for the public. So where you guys want to go with this? Do we want to set up, do we want to continue this item, take comments? Do we want to have a subcommittee work with the applicant to go over some initial?
I have a few comments.
Okay. Well, let's go through comments right now then. You know, for me, the critical points are the access points on the south and the north, and having continuous lateral access through the site in a safe manner, you know, throughout the appropriate time. So, okay.
Jesse?
So the way I see this, it seems like we have three variables that need to be resolved. So first off, the fishing, the active fishing, the active public, and then the cars. So to me, it's a pretty simple solution that the cars lose. Working with Scott, I'm sure we can find some ways to eliminate or alter the parking situation, both on the south end and in the 1 through 7 on page 1.1, to make this more palatable for both sides. The way I look at this, there's only 17 required parking spots. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Cindy, but it seems like we should be able to reconfigure because, I mean, there's more than what's listed next to stacks already. If we could turn those into parallel parking spots, maybe move. I can't, I don't know, the little laser. Do you have your laser?
Yeah. New toy.
So let's see here.
Never just push the button.
No button. Oh, there it is.
No, it's that button on the side. Technology.
So if these get pushed back several feet like Joe's talking about, I mean, that should help. Then you can deliver these people down here. And if you need to put some kind of physical barrier to keep these people from being hit by the cars, I mean, it seems like there's solutions to be had, and the parking could be the solution. It seems very common sense to me, but that's my comment. So.
Okay. Joseph?
I very much agree with giving the cars a tertiary position in this, as evidenced by my comments. And I think we can do something with signage in front of the order window, you know, informing people that they, you know, this is a public walkway, and if you want to order food, please be in the other line. It seems to me that the amusement parks, Disneyland being famous, they're just superb at controlling where people queue. And I think we can figure out something. And I don't think, I personally don't think we're going to lose any parking spaces in the south lot, but if we did, it wouldn't be so terrible. And with respect to the north lot, yeah, I think chains and cones would be a suitable prevention to ensure some kind of safety during the ongoing business. I'm assuming you're okay with the gate still being there to be closed at off hours. Is that
no?
Just eliminate the gate.
Eliminate the gate.
Okay,
that's my point. You know.
All right.
Mine too.
Okay.
And I take it there's no issue in terms of security and the anti-theft. There is an issue in terms of we have to think.
It's also along the whole rest of the Embarcadero. Uh-huh. This is not unique.
Okay.
You know.
Well, that deserves some more thought. It is a considerable issue, but it's solvable.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I think the 2012 versus now, the car has gotten a lot of lot less credibility than the access of the people who are buying the stuff and driving the car. When I look at the plan, I just see, you know, it looked in 2012 like everything was very tight. You know, I take my 300 students when I was teaching the freshmen down to Port San Luis, and we do measuring the whole pier, and we have 300 kids out there around all the equipment, and we never had any trouble. We got scolded for being in the way of parking and cars, but not the action of the hoists that are there. And you know, I don't want to lose any or have the operations of the commercial fishing compromised. I totally agree with Commissioner Luer. That's why people come. I'm much more interested in seeing real things than seeing representations of real things. And to me, it's that parking lot's a mess. And I think it's as soon as you compromise 10 to 8 to 5, and then you compromise the 5. We've got a problem, and I think it's time to rethink that parking. I appreciate it's hard to run a business in a lot of public access areas like this, but the waterfront's meant to be public, and I agree with taking down the gate. I wish there was a way to widen that corner, but short of widening the corner, I think what you know Commissioner Barone was talking about here with the parking, maybe something. I certainly don't want to think about requiring any internal changes at this point, but I'm not convinced there can't be some things about realigning the way things work around the perimeters, including testing the parking. And I certainly would be open, since this is a very bizarre mishmash of waterfront, private, city entities here, I would like to see somehow the operations outlined in a plan and then a walkway outlined, and see what the parking has. If these were the parking spaces in 2012, our aerial view showing where the cars are now, there's things along the back of stacks as well as a realignment along the wharf. And I think that just shows things have been put in play, and we should just continue to take a look at that. I was trying to sketch over top of the plan, probably unsuccessfully, but I was really interested in if you couldn't get a second line of 45-degree parking and just scrap all the parking along the edge of the wharf anyway, because those people backing up are using the same space the people with the forklifts use, which mm-hmm. That would just take the cars all away from that zone and have so much more free area in there to move around. And I think there has to be some taking a look at that. But I think we have to take a stand as the advocates for the planning for the public, that we have to have the public access. That's absolutely critical. And I would defend the shipping or the fishing as something that's equally critical to make sure it works. And then where your business operations can be shown to need to break that line, I think the temporary things are fine. I know you're a small business person, but I just can't help but think the 20-foot racks that are in Costco and Home Depot, those things get resupplied while people are in that store all the time. And I just think there's so many ways to think about the operational aspect with signage and temporary things that I think would protect the public and your interests.
Susan?
Definitely agree that cars should take third place, and I would be more than happy to work on changing the parking plans or having Rob Leivick look at it again, whoever's job that is. And if we needed to give them some kind of variance that says you can have fewer parking spaces. One of my concerns is that area where the live tanks are. It would be really, and that may require removing a parking space there just so people can walk around that or wheel around it if there's a accessibility issue with wheelchairs. I'm not really necessarily in favor of taking down that north gate. What I'm hearing and understanding from folks who are working down on that waterfront and or living there is that there's a growing problem with vandalism and with folks who are living down there, causing mischief down there, and worse. And there's a lot of dangerous equipment there. And if people are messing with it, there's the fuel dock is there. That, you know, is also a Coast Guard issue. Somebody mentioned that's a Homeland Security issue. I mean, they close off behind Cuesta College, you know, from 6 to 6 every night. For what? I don't know. But, and I'm not saying we should, you know, go that far here. But until we get some better kind of policing or lighting or something in that area to keep it safe and visible so that if we do have patrol driving by, they can see who's there and what's going on. I'm not sure I would ask them to take that gate down.
Susan, just to note is that south entrance is not gated.
It's not gated, and I would almost suggest that be gated. But
I would say sure not that.
I won't go there. And I would be So I'd be interested in looking at the parking. I would be interested in having Geo and Crowd work on a sign plan with staff, you know, come up with some kind of plan so that we are more comfortable with the addition of the appropriate signage for coastal access and where the good places for that to be. Also that there's a public restroom, signage for that that's a little more obvious probably on both ends. And I would like to give him the opportunity to try and make this right and come back to us with it. It's not a public hearing, so we're not making decisions here, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I think we can make suggestions of what we'd like to see. And so I think we all sounds like agree that the moving the cars somehow so that they're not blocking the access, helping delineate a better way for the order lines, and you're right, you know, Disneyland does it. They get you queuing, and then somebody else goes off in another direction, and it's signage. It's telling people, here's where you go, here's what you do. And I don't know what could be done with those tanks, short of, again, creating a walkway around them that would probably go into a parking area, which would mean you would have to move one of those cars. So those are my thoughts. I think we've got to be able to allow the fishermen to do what they're doing. Yeah. And we need the public access, and they're going to interfere with each other. Yeah. And fishing doesn't operate on a timetable. It's a tide table. It's a, you know, it's a when the fish are in. So you can't always predict that.
No.
Ever predict that.
Okay, and I don't think we're trying to predict it. I don't think we're trying to set hours on the fishing operation. The critical points are, okay, one of the problems I see is that, you know, on the order line on the fish, basically, it was designed to use public property for private commerce. And so that's conflicting now. His private commercial operation is conflicting with the public priorities of lateral access. So that needs to be resolved. So I think we've got the catch points. So I'll just ask for a nod out there. Do you guys have enough to work on if we continue this item, or do you want to? We'll open up public comment again.
So maybe staff is taking notes too. But so look at the order, the takeout window line. See if we can figure out some way to look at that. Look at the parking lot on the between Stacks and Giovanni's Fish Market, especially the parking spaces that are along the wharf edge there, to see if there's a way that we can either reconfigure, remove something. Look at signage, better signage. I'm trying to see if there was. I could look at my. I put my page to see if there was anything else in there that.
What's that?
May I put this up there?
That's actually what's up there, that section there.
Oh.
You want to put the rest of it?
Well,
enlarge it out.
I'm sorry, Kathy. I don't mean to interrupt.
No.
That's okay. That's the three that I've got right now, so if you can help me out a little bit with.
Okay. Removal of the gate.
I can tell you now that the removal of the gate is going to be very problematic.
Okay. I think we have 4-1 up here, so
okay.
We need to
look at it. If you'd like to put it on your list, fine, but... It's a very big issue, and
yes, it is.
And it's a big issue for Giovanni's.
Yes.
Susan alluded to the security problems. The difference between the south side and the north side is, the north side is when you remove that gate, you have vehicular access into the whole entire area there, where equipment can be taken out. You do not have vehicular access from the south side.
What about
it's
a bollard?
Different from the rest of the Embarcadero.
What if you put a bollard in?
prevent the vehicular access, and with a lock that you can lock the bollard in.
We're still talking about problems. It's in a location that is extremely dangerous. This gate was permitted back in the 80s, and the council recognized back then when they gave the permit for this that it was to be able to be closed in the evenings for security purposes. And that was what was written in the conditions. So it's something that goes back for many years, and that will be a real problematic thing.
Could you confirm that, Scott? I thought I heard you say, or maybe staff say, that we could never find a permit, that gate was ever permitted.
I've never. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, by the way.
Yeah, if we know it's the 80s, maybe it'll be easier to hunt for it now.
Okay, so if you can get documentation on that, but we also have coastal commissions stating that should be removed and it should be a temporary barrier.
No, the coastal commission did not.
If you read the condition on this, they're talking about temporary closures. A gate is not a temporary closure. A gate is a permanent, and we have no other gates on the lateral access along the whole rest of the Embarcadero. This is the only location, and we've removed gates from other places, lateral access on the walkway, where we specifically required them to take out gates.
So I'm going to agree to disagree with you on that, because I was directly involved with the Coastal Commission when we did this, and that was not a specific condition of the Coastal Commission to remove that gate at the north. They did not require that. They wanted no other gates across the south end, and et cetera. It was not anything to do with the north gate.
Okay.
May I ask a question here?
Sure.
And tell me I'm off base or I'm way out of line here, but with technology being what it is, and motion sensing lighting and motion sensor cameras, would it be possible to have some sort of I don't want to say a monitored system, but security type of situation where the lights kick on, the cameras kick on, and some kind of audible, hey, we're watching you, please go away, kind of, my dad can do it and open his door from Las Vegas, So I'm wondering, if can we figure out a way to have some sort of security system rather than prohibiting access?
I don't think that would solve the problem, because, we've got – the police department gets calls. People have video cameras down there behind their places, and they come in the next day and they found that there's been a lot of damage. And say, I got a video camera. I can show where this person came in and did all this graffiti or whatever it is. But that doesn't help the police department actually catch the person that's actually doing it and the damage that can be done. So,
but they still can get in from the south side.
Right. Yeah. But
I don't want to get into an argument here on this, so let's go ahead and the list of things that need to be addressed. We were going through it. The other things that I can see are we've got the southern, the walk-up, the order window.
Right.
I think you had that.
Yes.
We've got the Verges information booth. We need to discuss that. And then the business signage also.
So the Verges is supposed to be scheduled normally, I think,
that's
June. Is that something that you're asking us to do now? Because I'm not quite following what you're asking for that.
Okay, that was something staff put in on that. Do we want to tie that in, the review on the Verges?
It's a report back in May when we're bringing it back. I think the way it was conditioned. I think let's not tie that up into this maybe.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, then we need, if we can, if at this point, too, it's a good time to look at the signage for the whole property, too. I think that was one of the staff items to look at.
Yes. So that's going to take quite a bit more work, so I don't know if because I think that there's some old permits out there, and I was trying to dig through my old files, and I found something, so I think it's going to be taking time. I don't mind, deferring that and doing that. I'm not sure if we can – maybe we can answer some of these other questions a little quicker than we could the business signage, so if we don't have to put it all in one package, but just say that.
Yeah, I'm agreeable to that.
Okay.
So
that'd be great.
That's fine. These were just points of that – should be addressed at some point, but I think the critical point is the lateral access, and critical to that is the safe operation of the offloading and the queuing and the blockage of the southern lateral access. So,
do you mind if I interrupt?
Sure.
Go ahead. Got a question here. So, looking at this picture, I don't know if you could see it the same way we could see it, but the what would it take to do that, to back these cars, back that whole parking situation up 4 or 5 feet there, and then give Geo some more room there to queue?
I'm going to actually talk to the Public Works Department about it, when we get a chance, as it relates to this project, to see how much room's there. We have a plan that shows it all scaled out. So,
that's definitely possible, right?
I think for sure it can be moved probably a couple of feet. When you start moving it back too far, it comes in conflict with the other parking spaces that are going the other direction. So that would be the one caveat that I give you.
Okay.
It's tight. I mean.
So are you clear enough, Kathy?
I think so. So let me just run it down real quick.
Okay.
So the order line, the takeout window, the conflicts with the public access, and looking at any kind of reconfiguration for the queuing of that, the parking lot configuration by the wharf, looking at signage, if there's any more signage that would make things a little bit better. You said looking at removing the gate at the Beach Street. Verges, we're going to hold off and do that separately for a report to the Planning Commission in May. Business signage, want to do a review and see which signs, if we can find anything that was permitted or if we have to do a master sign program, and we can put in cones or fencing to make sure that we have safe operation for commercial fishing.
Right.
Did I get it all?
Okay. I think so. Anybody else got?
One other thing.
Commissioner
Stewart's comment about the fish tanks, whether or not that can be relocated, that choke point.
I think that would be part of the lateral access design.
Okay.
And the lateral access needs to be ADA compliant throughout the pathway. All right. Thank you very much. We'll close public comment at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, and bring it back to the commission. I think should we continue this item? Is this an action item?
So it doesn't mean continued. It's a business item. But given the, unless I hear something different from Gio or Kathy, when we come back related to the gate, that seems to be a sticking point. So this will be coming back as a public hearing for re-review of the CUP.
Okay.
Because it's the only way you can add conditions. You cannot add conditions otherwise. Like, this is a business item for discussion, right? So you understood that you couldn't add conditions today. But if that's the intent, and we still don't have resolution with the applicant, then it'll come back as a noticed public hearing item for re-review of the conditional use permit.
And I think we're going to need to be able to condition it on several points, so that it's clear, so we don't have this 2000.
Well, I think if they actually came back and were fine with everything, and we came to a resolution and we showed it to you and Planning Commission was happy, those could all just be incorporated into the project as minor modifications.
Okay.
Anything staff level, we don't have to do anything more than that. We don't have to have another hearing. But listening to the applicant's concern, and I've heard this concern before from them, I'm probably going to bring it back that way so they have the opportunity to appeal that decision.
But I think we do need to review whatever happens at the commission level.
No, that's what I'm saying. We're going to come back. We're going to, if they agree and we get a plan, we'll bring it back as a business item for you to look at. If they are not in agreement with that one piece of it, which they may not be, as indicated, then I'll bring it back as a public hearing item so you can add conditions and so they have the opportunity to appeal that condition.
Okay. Anybody else?
Maybe just a thought for Kathy, because I can appreciate how that area would be just a really attractive area for some mischief at night. So I for one would be interested in how this situation in terms of security differs from some of the other commercial fishing establishments further down the Embarcadero who aren't enclosed by a gate. I'd like to hear if you have some specific concerns about perhaps you can't put your heavy equipment behind a fenced area, or you can't put it inside a building. How is your situation different from the other fishermen who are dealing with their properties?
I have one question for Scott.
Sure.
Scott, looking at the CDP, the approved plan, the 1.1, given that this is private property, but it's also a city lease site, does Mr. Liebig need to weigh in if we decide, or if you decide that there's the ability to reduce the amount of required parking spots, and
for the lot on the south side, we would work through them.
North side,
public on the north side, that's not public.
Wasn't that the city lease site? Doesn't that bisect?
The city lease site. The city lease site does bisect this. Interestingly enough, something we didn't talk about to you is that the lease site's actually up. I know Gio's on carryover right now, but at some point that's not going to be the case. At which point we'll probably have a much more comprehensive look at all of these things in the future, and that's going to be happening soon because the lease is up. So,
well, I guess that kind of, I don't know if that makes the discussion different or not. So it's private property, but it's not.
So the private property portion of it, you have CUPs affecting that as well, and you have the CUPs for the lease site.
Right, but if you were able to somehow modify the number of parking spots that are required, or you know agree that they're given in kind somewhere else on that site, does Mr. Leibach need to be involved?
We'll look back and verify what was approved. Verify what the requirements are for parking on the site. I mean, that's what we'll work with them on. If we can come up with a reconfiguration, that can be, you know, dealt with on their internal parking lot through this body. That's not a problem.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what I was
saying. Yeah, not an issue. I mean, this parking lot right now, I think doesn't meet current parking requirements. But I think what Mr. Leibach tried to do is get them as close as possible and get the best yield. I believe that's what his attempt was.
Okay, so no action needs to be taken on this, and we'll look forward to a fruitful conversation on that. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to item number D, unfinished business. We have none. And then next item is item E, planning commissioner comments and future agenda items. We have, do you guys have any
We're
more
not
comments?
Allowed.
Yeah. We got
So I
did have a question.
Like I mentioned, she was going to bring that forward to you. We were going to bring that forward to you as a presentation. And so what Councilmember McPherson outlined to you was the process to add future agenda items, right? And that's so, and she, as she indicated when she was there, you can decide on a future agenda item you'd like to see. You can make a vote, and we can send a letter to council and have that conversation with them. That can either be put forward, again, vote of the Planning Commission, and then put forward either by the chair or in conjunction through written correspondence with myself and the chair to the council, and they can decide what they want to do with that. Just kind of depends.
Scott, it seems cleaner to for us to go through you, mm-hmm. and actually,
I'm happy to carry forward the message. I don't have a problem with that. They just said it because the boards have chairs, and they're like, well, if that's what wants to happen, that's great. But as long as you give direction, agree to that direction, I will happily convey that direction to the city council.
Yeah, and it's almost how we've been doing it.
Yeah. I don't know this really changes a whole lot of anything anyway. It's just we have a formalized process that we have to follow now.
Okay, anybody else on?
So one thing maybe we could just do a head nod that we are interested in the idea of creating a list of public benefits. We had talked about that on a previous thing and whether we would like to get a subcommittee together of Planning Commission, so it's not taking any staff time, but a group to maybe look at something, make a list, bring it forward as...
Well, that was one of the things that Scott and I has talked about and it would neatly fall into the commercial design guidelines, because then we could create public benefits for each of the zones. So Scott, where do we go with that?
So you could do it as part of that. You could do it separately. A commercial design guidelines time frame, fairly long. Coming up with a list of desired public benefits that we would prefer. Probably much easier on the part of a subcommittee of the Planning Commission. Probably could be something that's brought forward more quickly.
I'm not sure I understand what we mean by that.
Well, so, there was some talk that on the hotel project that having a certain number of electric car charging stations and the access, the bike lane, maybe wasn't enough of a public benefit, but then what would be, and is it fair to ask them to provide a benefit that's very far off of their property, that kind of thing. And so it did make sense to me. I think it was a public comment, and actually I think we'd gotten an email letter about that. it made sense that rather than just saying we have to provide some sort of amorphous public benefit that anybody could define, that we say, well, what are the things we want to see, like coastal access, for example, or public restrooms, or more trees planted, or, you know, whatever it is we feel are reasonable public benefits, understanding that in any specific project, it's going to vary. So it just seemed like an interesting idea.
I think it is, and I think it's something. And so Scott, just to bring this out in the open, we haven't discussed this much, but do want to create a subcommittee, even an ad hoc committee to do the commercial, to get a preliminary commercial design guidelines going.
So you can form subcommittees, and I don't think that's that's anything we have to really even involve council with. You can do work on your own, and I'm happy to provide some support to that. I'm not supposed to be providing a ton of support to that, but I do have an intern, and so research stuff like that I can pull together without a lot of effort. Then I'd be happy to sit down and meet with you from time to time to see where we're at on things. I'm like, that's not a time thing. I mean, that's something I'd normally do anyway. So I don't think that's a problem. Now, if you want to have it, something like we work through the residential design guidelines, that's a lot of staff work, and that was 11 meetings.
Yeah.
So I don't see the commercial design guidelines, being substantially fast, maybe fewer meetings, but probably not a faster timeline, just so you can work through it, because it was, you guys fine-tuned that quite a bit when we developed those. So it kind of depends on what you're looking for. I mean, certainly, again, you could form separate subcommittees to look at commercial design guidelines, and then another subcommittee to look at public benefit items that we'd like to see, and then we can form what that is and come back and bring it to the full complement of the commission, and we can decide where we need to go from there. If you want to do that, if you want to do the process like we did for residential design guidelines, that's a council ask.
Yeah. Okay. And that's what I think. What I'm envisioning, and where I think we can go with this, and to keep staff time to a minimum, is to do an ad hoc committee with two of the commissions so that we don't have a quorum problem. Can we bring in willing members of the community to help with that?
So once we do that, that's an official council thing telling us to go do that. Subcommittee can go do that. A subcommittee can form a subcommittee. If we're going to do ad hoc committees, that's a council-directed thing.
Okay, so if we could do a subcommittee with two commissioners, we can have members of the community help us out and not involve the city, the council. As long as we're not taking up staff time.
I would not gather that was their intent.
I think if you are having regular meetings with the same regular... I mean, it would be one thing if, say, I called somebody and said, gee, what does your city do for this? But another thing, if we had those regular meetings with two commissioners and that those same three people from the community...
That's kind of the issue there. I mean, certainly as the... Again, I'm gonna differentiate, right? We have an ad hoc committee... could be two members of the planning commission, and then we go find some folks out there that are willing to sit on it. And you have a regular meeting schedule, and we're putting stuff together for you. That was something that the council would need to okay, and would probably want to have some say as directing how we're setting it up potentially, or maybe not. Maybe they just leave it to you. I don't know. The subcommittee thing is just. You guys, and if you, on occasion reached out to somebody to, get some opinion type stuff, I think that's fine. That's not an ad hoc committee, really. That's just reaching out to folks that you know in your network to have a conversation, but you're not meeting with them 10 times to develop the policy, because if you're meeting with them 10 times, that's an ad hoc committee.
Okay. So my question to the other commissioners is, would somebody else like to set up a subcommittee, work with me on creating this, and who would...
I'm retired, so I'm available.
Okay.
I have seven jobs, so thank you.
Maybe you guys, because you got to have more time. But but I'd like to, so just a question of, do you guys want to just talk about it amongst yourselves and then figure out who would like to volunteer for that?
Yeah.
Okay. Because any one of you guys, I think it would be, we could put something quickly together. Or basically what I'm seeing, and I guess we should probably...
You can talk about it.
Can we talk about it?
You can.
Okay, basically what I'm seeing is creating a survey, and I've already done some of the work, but we create a survey of the commercial design guidelines for appropriate communities and representative communities to Morro Bay. And then we've already got our formwork of our 10 districts, mm-hmm. commercial districts that we can apply them to. And then once we get a compendium of the existing of things that work out there, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Take a look and see what would work for our community, and then we can kind of coalesce it into a document that then staff could review and tell us where we're right and where we're wrong, and then we can save the city a lot of money and do it and get this done.
Yeah.
So that's my overall plan. So if you guys want to, whoever wants to raise their hand for the second, for another seat, then.
Probably Joseph ought to, just because I'm still involved with the vacation rental committee, yeah. which is taking up a little bit of time every week.
Yeah.
And that hopefully will be done soon, but.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have more time.
I just wonder, with the status of the general plan, if things in the general plan would change. Like, to me, one of the great opportunities that we have in the general plan is a significant reconceptualization of certain street areas in the core, down in the business district.
So you did look at those things through the circulation element component of the general plan. You did kind of look at what the options there would be. We do have kind of that design element that's in there as well. And there's some additional design direction that's also provided in the zoning code update. More higher level things, that are in there, not super specific. It doesn't go street by street or area by area. It kind of just says, hey, here's a list of things you should be considering when you're looking at design. We don't have any of that in the current code, right? You don't have any direction in there. There's some vague language related to neighborhood compatibility, and then you have to figure out what that means. So,
and then we have to defend it.
Yes.
Well, I guess what I was saying is that we could have a significantly reconceptualization of what the neighborhood downtown might look like. So neighborhood compatibility with existing would be not a moot point, but we're actually seeding new ideas for what parts of the downtown would be. Yes. So it's well beyond neighborhood compatibility. It's establishing what the neighborhood
absolutely, and you have documents to pull from for these things, right? I mean, you have the Downtown and Waterfront Strategic Plan. It gives you mm-hmm. starting points about, where the city's desire was when that document was adopted back in 2016. So you have some things there, and you see those in our staff reports. When we have projects in the downtown, we bring those forward, and you'll see a few things from that, pulled out that are generalized design guidelines, and then there's ones that are specific to the waterfront and specific to the downtown. But, I mean, we have some things, just not a full set of design guidelines for different areas.
Okay. And so, Scott, just on the logistics on this, can this be distributed without, getting into, a Brown Act? No.
So your subcommittee is going to work between the two folks that are doing that,
right.
And then if you decide to tap someone on the shoulder and, ask them questions about things, that's fine. You can't distribute it among the rest of the group. The first time they're probably going to see it is when you've gotten to a point where you're ready to show it to them, and then we can agendize that for a discussion.
Okay.
Right? And it's not like you can't have a few discussions about it. You can. That's kind of how it would come forward.
Okay. Sounds like a path forward.
And when we've identified who's on that, I need to know.
Okay.
All right.
All right, then.
I was just going to say, I would love to be on it, but yes. I am absolutely impacted until the end of June. Anything between now and the end of June, and I may have some significant life events changing in September. So I have to be very cautious.
I'm not it either.
Okay, great. Great. Scott, you're up for any comments?
I don't have anything today.
Okay. I never did get a chance about the agenda item, so I'm going to go back to the one agenda item I've been kind of pushing every...
Yeah.
Every other meeting or so. So now that we have a formal process, can we query the city council about talking about sprinklers within mobile home parks at some point.
Within mobile home parks.
So that would be taking up the review.
I didn't like that they had that loophole last time.
Right.
So they were in the mobile home park and they got out of sprinklers because HCD is not very good at their job.
So, Scott, so would we have to do a full building review and take over from HSC?
HCD.
HCD.
I'll tell you right now that that's not going to happen.
No, no, and I don't want that to happen. I know that's a lot of work for you, and I wouldn't even want to impose that on you. What I would like is to see if we can possibly get the chief to say, you shall sprinkler when you're in my city, period, if you're building new stick-built construction.
And
he has that authority as a fire marshal. So.
And are we doing over 50%? 50% remodeling or
300 square foot additions,
then need to be.
And then there's the remodel part of it that we're working on exactly what that means. They came up with some language and now they're not sure. So
don't do it.
No, they did it, and then now they're not exactly sure where they landed. And so literally two development review team meetings ago, maybe three. We have them every Tuesday. They raised the question about what certain aspects of it meant, and they were supposed to go sit down and figure out what that is, and then report back. And they haven't reported back to us yet. So
there's a agency nearby that has some significant problems with that as well. And I'm sure you can read between the lines there. So
yeah.
Yep. Okay. Then at this point, we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street, on March the 3rd. It's at 6 p.m. Thank you very much.
And I will be here next week.
Oh, you will? Oh, okay.